You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. This week, I'm delving into a part of the paranormal I've not covered before. Spirit rescue. Unlike exorcism or the cleansing of a property, spirit rescue is a process of communication with any earthbound or attached spirits that may be causing a haunting. To discuss this fascinating topic with me is Stephen Williams, founder of Memphis Spirit Rescue. We discuss his introduction to the paranormal, his personal experiences, and how he founded the Spirit Rescue Team. We also discuss some of his cases, as well as some of Memphis's most famous hauntings. It's a very interesting and unusual look at hauntings, perhaps coming from the perspective of the haunter rather than the haunted. Stephen was great company, so thank you to him for his time and conversation. So incredibly, I'm about to hit my 100th episode, which still staggers me, and I am chuffed to bits, as we say here in Yorkshire, that so many people seem to enjoy the programme, what I do and how I do it. It means a great deal to me, especially the people that email me. I'm always interested to hear from anyone about a variety of topics, and I've had people email me about their personal experiences and how I can help them, or if I've got any recommendations or ideas or anything like that. So anything that you're interested in, just drop me a line. So for the 100th episode, I'm going to be doing something a little bit special. It's taking a bit of work to pull it all together, but I hope you enjoy it, and I just want to do something a bit different for the show, for the 100th edition, as a thank you to you, the listeners, for your support over the last, 21 months it'll be by the time the 100th episode lands in December. So I hope you'll keep listening. I hope you'll enjoy it and see where we go into next year, 2021. Blimey. So as we look forward to next year, which sounds a bit odd talking about this in November, I'll keep trying to get a wide variety of interesting guests, and we'll be covering exciting topics along with the continual return of your favourite guests. I've got some cracking shows coming up to get you through the dark nights of winter. Don't forget, you can email me with any guest suggestions or ideas for topics that I've not covered as yet, or if you just want to say hello and talk about anything in regards to your personal experiences or any potential situations you may have. Email me, mysteriesandmonsters@gmail.com, and I promise to get back to you as quick as I can. Don't forget, you can also find us. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and we're on Instagram. Our channel now is officially under Mysteries and Monsters on YouTube, which I'm not sure it was connected to the fallout I had with them the other week, but there we are. So we now are officially Mysteries and Monsters on YouTube, which is exciting. And there's a couple of things that I'm working on in regards to YouTube and something else, which may make things look a little bit better. So that should be coming this side of Christmas, one hopes. As always, artwork for the show is by my brother, Dean Bestel. The show is produced by the wonderful Brennan Storr from the Ghost Story Guys. And Mysteries and Monsters is a part of the Straight Up Strange Network. So then, let's join Stephen Williams to discover what Spirit Rescue is all about on this week's show. Today, I am delighted to be joined by the founder of Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue, Stephen Williams. With almost 20 years' experience, Stephen and his team have an intuitive and objective approach to the paranormal, which may strike some as both original and unique. Stephen, welcome to the show, sir.
Hello, Paul. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. Stephen, Spirit Rescue is something I've been aware of for a while. So for anybody who's not familiar with this term or what it entails, Could you give us a brief synopsis of what Spirit Rescue is and what your team attempts to try and do?
Okay, sure. Well, typically, most investigators will go into a site and try to gather evidence and present that evidence to a homeowner or business owner as proof, you know, that there is actual paranormal activity taking place at a site. We do present proof to our clients, but we do it not through the use of electronic equipment or recordings or that type of thing. We rely on our intuitive abilities, and we actually can make connections, psychic connections with spirit energies at sites. And then our focus is on doing counseling and presenting options to any spirits that we encounter a site, so that they know that they have those options and are able to move on, transition, release from a site. And that's a good thing for not only the spirits who are stuck there or looking for some help, but it's all, but also helps the homeowner and business owner, because their lives are able to return to normal. So that's our focus, is on doing counseling and helping those spirits to move on if they choose to do so. It's their free will choice.
Yeah. So it's quite a unique take on the paranormal, Stephen, and the standard procedures that I think most people would recognize in regards to addressing issues and assisting people who may be suffering from a haunting. So how is it that you've ended up at this point in your life dealing with this aspect of the paranormal in the way that yourself and your team do? How is it that you found yourself getting involved in the paranormal in the first place that's led you to this point in your life?
Well, about 18 years ago, I was on a family vacation down in Florida in the city of St. Augustine. And that is allegedly the oldest city in the U.S., has many different layers of history. And I just, on a whim, just went on a ghost tour. Didn't really know much about any of this. And took some photos that were interesting and found a small group back in my area in Memphis when I got home from that vacation, and sent those photos to them. And we corresponded. They actually debunked my photos, but I became very interested at that point. And then eventually they asked me to join them. It was just two ladies. And so it was the three of us for a while. And we started to get requests from homeowners and business owners to go into different locations and do work. And in the beginning, I was very much equipment oriented. I really had not developed any kind of intuitive abilities at that point, so I did rely entirely on equipment. We did have one of the ladies was a developing medium, so she was able to sometimes get some impressions and some information that way. But it was about 5 years later before I really became involved in Spirit Rescue, and I met a medium when I returned to St. Augustine down in that area. And she introduced me to the concept of Spirit Rescue. And so that has been my focus for the past 13 years.
Yeah. I mean, as someone that loves the paranormal and hauntings in particular, Stephen, I've often found it both perplexing and confusing that whenever anybody tends to deal with a haunting, the aspect always seems to be of how it's affecting the person or the family or the property. And yet there are enough cases and reports over the years, Stephen, where we seem to have very tragic hauntings or hauntings that seem to have occurred through a family tragedy or a sudden death. And for me, I've often found it unusual that people never seem to kind of comprehend the situation from the spirit point of view. Do you know what I mean? It's basically
absolutely
everything is based on how it's affecting the people who live in that property now. Because I've often had a very open mind in regards to this aspect, that I would imagine that there are plenty of situations where a spirit or a ghost or whatever you want to call them is probably as easily perplexed and concerned at having a house full of strange, weird people that it doesn't know than the family are that they seem to have some kind of disembodied entity living with them.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And we've run across those types of situations many times where the spirit is in a sense, frightened or very upset, you know, because someone has come into their what they consider their space or their home. Many times when they do the things that they do, people, I think, misinterpret that as threatening. But usually in my experience, when they touch people, when they knock, when they move things, turn lights on and off, that type of thing, people see that as scary and threatening, but usually it's just kind of a cry for help. And that's the only way, being in an energetic form, these spirits are able to manipulate our environment to a certain extent. And they'll do just about anything they can to get the person's attention. And I've also found that when someone contacts us, a lot of times the activity will increase exponentially. And the people will email back or leave a text message or something, say, well, it's getting really, really bad. It's getting worse. And I'll say, what do you mean? And they said, well, they're doing more things now. And I said, yeah, that's because they're very excited because you have actually contacted someone, you know, who's able, who will be able to come in and hear their story, you know, and give them a voice and possibly offer them some help. So they get, yeah, they do get excited and they do more things.
I mean, I found it very interesting because many people I speak to in the world of parapsychology or ghost investigations, there seems to be a general frustration in the popular culture version of hauntings that we see across the world now, Stephen, where and I've spoken to a couple of guests in regards to this, because it seems that over the last 20 to 30 years there's been a development in the way that we view hauntings, that the majority of them tend to be evil or demonic or aggressive. And yet when we look through the history of the paranormal, the vast majority of hauntings seem to be quite ambivalent, unusual, gentle even. Is that something in your experience through Spirit Rescue and your previous paranormal investigations, Stephen, that you would tend to agree with? Or do you suspect that it can be that negative? However, the majority of situations are quite placid.
I would say the majority of the investigations that I've been involved in over the past 18 years, there has never been anything that I would classify as demonic. There are some dark energies out there, but I think we tend to get cases that are just people who are needing help, people who are out of body that need help. And again, I think the client sometimes will misinterpret what's going on. We had a case down in Mississippi where a young lady was very, very intuitive, and she moved into a home. And this gentleman was, you know, he was trying to get her attention in different ways. He would touch and he would push a little hard, maybe. When we finally got down there and make a connection with him, what had happened was he was an alcoholic. And it was very interesting because you could walk into the space that where his energy was dominant and you would feel drunk. So he was actually projecting that feeling onto or onto me and the other people there in that space. Yeah. But once we got his story, what had happened was he had been involved in an accident when he was driving drunk where he had killed a loved one. And so he was very upset and angry about that, and of course remorseful and everything. And the energy that he projected was of that turmoil and that agony. And the lady who was very intuitive, young lady, was interpreting that as threatening and menacing. But once we gave him an opportunity to talk about that and explain to him that we could help him reunite with that loved one, you know, his whole demeanor changed. And so, you know, I think a lot of times people go into these situations and they see things being, you know, maybe thrown or what people consider poltergeist activity. It's really just someone just trying to get attention in the only way they know how.
Yeah. Is that one of the reasons that these spirits can end up being tethered to a particular property or a location, Stephen? Is it a sense of unfinished business or frustration, or are there numerous reasons why spirits can find themselves stuck, as it were, in a kind of limbo where they seem to know what's happened but not how they can resolve their predicament?
Precisely. Another instance of something like that is we went to a home in Midtown Memphis, and we discovered a young girl who was hiding in a closet. Mm. And she kept repeating over and over, "The house is on fire." And so that was her last thought. And she was caught kind of in a mental loop. So who knows how long she would have hidden in that closet, you know, trying to escape from that fire. And we are energy workers, so we're actually able to project energy to a spirit and help raise their vibration. And many times that will help them break out of those types of mental loops and things like that. So we were actually able to help her collect her thoughts and get a dialogue going. And then we were able to direct her to where she, you know, would have a better existence than that closet. Mm. So, yeah, there's all kinds of different reasons that they tell us. One gentleman told us that he was not leaving the house that he built. It was his crowning achievement. Mm. You know, so they're very possessive sometimes of objects or their home. Sometimes they follow people that remind them of loved ones. I've had cases where we went to a house one time and there was a gentleman there and the lady had reminded him of his wife. Hmm. So that's why he followed her. So there's all kinds of different reasons they give us.
I mean, it is remarkable, like I say, because when I became aware of your team's work, I found it a very refreshing and pleasant take on the paranormal, Stephen. I have to be honest, because as I touched on earlier, far too often we see people running into houses and screaming and caterwauling and basically telling these poor residents that they're weeks away from being seriously injured or mentally and physically damaged in some way. So when I looked through your website and some of your previous work that I've seen you involved in and previous interviews I've read that you've given in the States, it was a refreshingly positive take on the paranormal, Stephen. And have you found, when you are called into properties to help people, that they seem to have a predetermined idea of how you're going to be, and then they seem to be quite surprised by the way you actually interact both with them and whatever is in their property?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we'll go into homes and they'll have all the lights turned out, and I'll say, what have you got your lights turned out for? We need light to do our work, you know. And I said, this is not like television, and we're not going to be here for hours and hours. Typically, we go in and if it's a small, you know, two or three bedroom home, we're able to finish our work within an hour, hour and a half. And we're not there really late at night or anything like that, because these people have children that they have to have off site while we're working. Mm. And no, it's nothing. When I began 18 years ago, actually, there was not that much on television at that point. The guys on Sci-Fi, the Tabs guys, Ghost Hunters, did not have a show. And so there was not a lot of information out there. We just kind of, by trial and error, found what worked for us in those days. And over the years, the equipment fell away. Typically, I will only take two pieces of equipment. I always record every investigation just to document it. Mm-hmm. And then the other little piece of equipment I take is an EMF meter. And I really don't use that for spirit communication, because we're able to do that psychically. But sometimes you'll go into a house and there might be bad wiring, or there might be a power source nearby that's causing people to hallucinate or have some kind of false impression. So we always want to rule that out. But basically, we just rely on our own intuitive abilities. Um, I am clairsentient, which means that I could come into your home and tell you if you have any spirits there, and also tell you if they're male or female and where their vibration is at, whether they're what we call earthbound, or it could be a relative who's already transition is in a higher vibration, is one to sometimes they will do things when there's a crisis in a family. They will create disturbances so that the family members will contact someone like us that can deliver messages. And we had a case one time where there was a small town north of Memphis that we were called to. I was working with a different medium at the time. And what was happening there was there was a lady and her 16-year-old daughter were living in this house. Every morning, the 16-year-old would wake up with pennies on her pillow. And that was, you know, that was quite disturbing for them. You know, where was this? Why was this happening? Where was it coming from? They were frightened.
Yeah.
So we went there. And what was going on was the lady's mother, which would have been the 16-year-old's grandmother, was the person who was bringing the pennies. Now, she was not earthbound. She was already what we'd term crossed over or at a higher vibration. But the crisis in the family was that the mother was planning on marrying a certain man. And this grandmother in spirit did not want her daughter to marry the man. She knew he was not a good choice. So the way that she validated who she was is she told the medium whom I was working with, Stephanie, that she told her favorite church hymn. And it was a church hymn I wasn't really familiar with. But as soon as Stephanie announced that, the mother and the 16-year-old knew exactly who it was. So that's just an example of sometimes you go into a home. There were no earthbound spirits in that home. It was a family member who was trying to get a message through.
Yeah. As you referred to there, Stephen, you touched on about certain levels of spirits having different vibrations. For people who aren't familiar with these type of terms, how would you define these differing vibrations, and what is the key difference between them?
Well, I mentioned earlier I'm clairsentient, so if you're familiar with chakras, in my crown chakra area around my head, that's how I first realized I was able to sense the energy of spirits. If I sense a high vibration, it's going to be much closer to the top of the crown chakra area. If I feel an earthbound spirit, it's lower, more like at ear level for me. If I feel on the right side, I know it's masculine. The left side, I know it's feminine. So the only term I think that we can use that even comes close to kind of describing this is vibration, but it's really almost an awareness. Some of these spirits, like the young girl that was in the closet, her vibration I would term would be much, much lower, to where she was kind of in a mental fog, and and she was, her vibration was really slow. She was very introspective, and she wasn't really aware of her surroundings. And when these people make that transition and leave the earth plane and cross over into spirit, into a higher realm, their awareness increases exponentially, and they have a wider perspective. That's about, that is what was going on with this grandmother, who probably was able to go around and see what this gentleman was involved in, and knew that she did not want her daughter to be marrying that guy. So, you know, it's great to have those people and our spirit guides working with us, and able to give us information or show us signs and that type of thing. If you're aware of that, and if you're watching for that, you can. I always ask people, you know, have you found any coins or feathers in your home? And if they'll, and I've actually been in homes where I've walked into a room with a client, and there are no coins there. We walk out and we walk back in, and there's, you know, a couple of pennies laying on the bed or something out of nowhere. So those are the loved ones who are bringing those little signs and gifts to let people know they're around and they're watching over them.
Absolutely. In regards to as you refer to there, the case with the grandmother being able to sort of reach out from the other side, I think some people work on the principle of, because a lot of people presume that when a spirit or an entity crosses over, Stephen, that's the end of their kind of ability to reach backwards influence mm-hmm. or make themselves aware. So how does that work for certain spirits, that they are able to kind of come back and, as you say, make a family aware of their disdain for their prospective suitor, shall we say?
Right. I don't understand the mechanics of it. I will tell you that we have helped spirits cross over, and they were at a vibration that I would consider earthbound, and immediately they come back and thank us, and I can sense their vibrations, you know, is much, much higher. So I guess they get a hall pass, you know. They get, they can come and go as they please, and I think it's an awareness thing, and they're, you know, you can kind of create your own reality in a sense. So if you wanted to come back and serve as a spirit guide or a guardian over a family member, a child, you know, maybe a grandchild or something like that, I think that's perfectly allowable. And in my experience, those things do occur. So that, to me, it's not an end. Even when, you know, when the girl in the closet who was, you know, terrified of the house fire, when she did finally, when her relatives came for her, it was a mother who came for her. I'm sure that they were reunited. Maybe there was some healing that occurred there, and then she was presented with opportunities for growth. I think that it's a growth journey that never ends.
I suppose it's reassuring for them on the other side as well, Stephen, that if they have a situation like this, as you say, with this poor little girl who was trapped in the closet, obviously reliving this reoccurring nightmare of the house being on fire, I would imagine it's probably as confusing and upsetting for her family who are on the other side, because they don't have their daughter either. That, you know, so for them, it's probably as stressful and as upsetting knowing that she's there, but they can't get to her either.
Yeah, it used to really disturb me when we would come across a child spirit. It was like, okay, why hasn't someone come and rescued this child? You know, an angel or a family member or some higher vibrational being. But, you know, everyone, this to me is all about free will. So if for some reason a child is okay here, and maybe they need that experience of being an earthbound spirit, you know, for their growth. What I have discovered, though, is that when there is a child spirit who is earthbound, there is always a loved one who's nearby. It could be an aunt. It could be a grandmother. The child is usually not aware because they're at a lower vibration. They cannot see or hear those people. So our job, we're kind of like bridges in a sense. So our job is to connect these earthbound spirits with their loved ones who are at those higher vibrations and make them aware of those people and direct their attention towards them, because it's like they're kind of in a fog in a sense, and they can't really see or hear those people until we kind of help them unite in a sense energetically.
Yeah, it's almost as if spirits have their own versions of guardian angels then, Stephen.
Right.
Which is a very interesting concept in itself.
Yep. It's comforting to know that, you know, we're never alone in whatever state we're in. And even, you know, now I live alone. And so I always feel the spirits come and go, and I can tell, you know, if it's loved ones and that type of thing. So, or a guide. So it's comforting to know that we're never truly alone. You know, even physically, when we don't have other people around, our spirit friends are always around us.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes it really is quite therapeutic and beneficial, because especially if you've had a traumatic loss or you're trying to come to terms with grief, which a lot of people do find difficult for a variety of reasons, Stephen.
It's right.
Situations have always interested me where people have received some kind of comfort, as you say, as you mentioned earlier on in regards to pennies and feathers. Feathers are often seen as a sign that someone is wanting to make their presence known from the other side, often in a comforting or reassuring way, in my experience, Stephen. Has that been your experience of that phenomena?
Absolutely. Yeah, those are things I always tell people. If they find coins or feathers and they're sure, you know, maybe they live alone, they don't have anybody else that's could have dropped those things out of their pocket, I always tell people, you know, those really literally are pennies from heaven. And I advise them, you know, pick them up and put them in some kind of special container and put them on the mantle or, you know, on a shelf somewhere. And that will remind you that, you know, those people are always with us, and occasionally they'll bring, especially in times of crises, that will always bring more gifts, it seems like.
Yeah, as though they are trying to reassure the person that needs that support and guidance at that time then.
Absolutely, right.
Yeah, I mean, the other aspect of your work I seem to be quite surprised with but pleased to see is that you seem to have a very balanced and relaxed approach when you approach a property or people that are having a variety of phenomena in their homes or their property or their land even, Stephen. Is that something that you've learnt or you've basically found through personal interaction and experience that it's the best way to deal with things? So often the phrase is fight fire with fire, but as you referred to earlier on in regards to the spirit of the gentleman who lost his partner in a drink driving accident, what we were taking as anger was actually frustration at his situation. So I would imagine it's almost like you're giving them therapy.
It is. Yeah, there's a lot of psychotherapy involved in this work. And we always approach every single situation with compassion. Mm. There's only been a few instances since I put this new team together. I've been, you know, doing this kind of work for 18 years, but the new team, rescue team here that I put together was in October, well, about 2 years ago, actually, October of 18. Mm. And we've only had one situation during that time where we went into a home and there was a malevolent energy there that was trying to frighten the homeowner and was actually making her feel like she was having a pillow placed over her head. So we did counseling with that person, and it was very apparent this was just not a good energy. And in those instances, we call on higher allies, higher vibrational allies to come in and look at the situation. And if they feel like it's someone who needs to be removed or some energy that needs to be removed, then they will deal with that. But it's always about free will with us. We're going to counsel, and explain to them they have options. But that particular situation was causing harm to the client, and it was apparent that there was not going to be any change that was going to occur otherwise. So we did have to call in for some assistance. That's very, very rare, though.
Yeah. I mean, is it often a situation where you'll find that spirits seem quite happy where they are? They don't want to cross over or go into the light, as some people would refer it to, Stephen. They quite like being where they are, and the people there, well, they might seem to think they're quite happy living with these people. I would suspect that most people tend to be quite glad that these people eventually move on.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, again, it's not our responsibility to move anyone on, to force anyone to go unless they're causing that the harm like that particular person energy was with the pillow thing. But most, you know, if the spirit is happy there and the homeowner or business owner was okay with them being there, what we'd like to do, though, is go in and explain to that spirit or spirits that they do have options. So that way they have information. Maybe they didn't know they had an option to leave at some point. Mm. So we don't ever put anyone on the spot and say, hey, you know, this is it. You got to make your choice right now. We just talk to them about it and explain to them that there are options, that their loved ones are waiting on them. And we explain to them how they can make that connection. And then it's up to them. So it's all free will choice. But yeah, one of my favorite cases I ever worked on was, I call it the Henry House, and there was a young boy got called to this house, and what was happening was the little girl in the family would come home from school every day and see this little boy waiting for her at the back door and wanting to play with her. And it was really cute. She said he was wearing capris, and I didn't know what she was talking about, so I looked it up, and so he was wearing knickerbockers like the kids used to wear in the 1930s.
Yeah,
those kind of short pants. And he was really an amazing spirit child. He did have someone with him. There was a crossover relative that was with him. But, you know, I could take anyone into that house. And he would make equipment light up and sound off. And he loved music from that time period when I brought that in there and played it for him. And I talked to him many, many times about leaving, but he was happy there. And he wasn't causing any, you know, any really severe problems or anything like that. So what was interesting, though, because he must have really, really been tied to the site in some way, because it was an old house, and the guy who owned it had built a house behind it up in the woods. And I went out there one day, and I took a medium with me who I had just met, and I was going to see if she could connect with him, this little Henry, and getting more information, or maybe we could help him cross over at that point. And they had torn the house down. They had bulldozed it, and it was just a pile of rubble. But what was interesting was on the top of the pile of rubble, about 10 or 12 feet up in the air, was a chair. And I had just met this young woman who was the medium, and I said, well, I didn't tell her anything about this boy. I said, do you see anyone around here? And she said, yeah, there's a little boy sitting in that chair up there. So that was Henry. He was determined he was not going to leave, even if they tore the house down. So he had somehow managed to put a chair on the top of the pile of rubble where he could sit and survey his little kingdom, I guess. And I actually went back there about a year later, and they had totally removed all the rubble, and the site was starting to become overgrown with small trees and things like that. And I could feel, I mean, he actually got in the car with me. And I talked to him a little bit. I could feel his energy, you know. I talked to him and said, Henry, why aren't you ready to go yet? And he just, you know, he wouldn't go. So he's happy there. He's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. I'm seeing it doesn't. It's not something that's reported very often, Stephen. But I have, over the years, seen a few cases, especially with children, where they have a very positive relationship with the spirit that lives in their house. Whether it's an older person or a fellow child that they consider as a playmate. And I have noticed on a couple of occasions where someone has come in and cleansed the house, the child is usually quite upset that they've lost this friend.
Right.
Is that something that you've come across before, where there is that kind of negative response to something moving on, that they seem to, because, you know, there are quite a few situations I've known people who've had hauntings, and they treat them as, I wouldn't necessarily say one of the family, but they have a very sort of positive experience, and the way that they think of this spirit, they treat it as a bonus and a benefit rather than anything negative at all.
Right. Well, Kayla, who's one of my partners, she's one of my original partners when I founded the group a couple of years ago. She grew up in a house here in Memphis, and she had a young girl who basically lived in her closet. I think her name was Lillian, I think. And Lillian stayed with Kayla during her childhood. She was kind of like a companion, you know, and gave her a lot of solace during different times. And at one point, I think when she reached about 12 or 13 years old, Lillian just came out of the closet and walked away and never came back. So she was there for a while, and she must have been needed. Maybe she was kind of like a spirit guide, or maybe she was a family member or something. I don't know. But and she did provide a lot of solace to Kayla. And, you know, she talks about her in a very loving way, and she was never frightened of her. And I'm sure she was, you know, a little bit sad when she left, but I guess she understood, you know, she was there for a time. And then I worked with a different medium, the one I was talking about earlier that saw Henry in the chair up on the pile of rubble. And when she was a young girl, she had two girls that were about 5 or 6 years old in white Victorian gowns that walked across the street. And they stayed with her for about 3 or 4 years during parts of her childhood, and then one day they left too. So I think sometimes those situations, especially when young girls are very intuitive and maybe they need some support, the spirit will send those little spirit children to be companions.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting aspect to it, because one of the things I've often found interesting about hauntings rather than poltergeists is that often there seems to be either a lack of appreciation or understanding of the situation, Stephen. So in your experience, when you've been going out and investigating and supporting people, have you come across situations where something has just started out of the blue? You know, someone's lived in a property 10, 15 years and something has just started? Or is it something that tends to be, it's always there and it just takes a while for people to actually take it seriously and think, hang on a minute, something's not quite right here?
I think it's both. And I have many clients that...
Welcome to Kraken Mare, the biggest liquid hydrocarbon ocean on Saturn's moon Titan.
And this is just one of the places you get to visit and learn about when you listen to the Hostile Worlds podcast.
The Hostile Worlds podcast, which is, of course, a science-based audio drama documentary series that teaches you all about our universe in a fun and entertaining way.
Head on over to hostileworlds.net to subscribe on your podcast app of choice.
You know, I always ask, well, you know, when did you move into the house? Did things start immediately? Mm. And many times they'll say, no, I've lived here 2 or 3 years, and then all of a sudden this started. Mm. There's usually some kind of underlying reason that activity begins. It could be that person has gotten to a point in their own development where they're starting to sense spirit energy, and the spirits pick up on that, and they, you know, they say, okay, well, I think she can see me now or hear me now. Mm. You know, I'm going to do this or do that. Sometimes they will follow. The house where the gentleman who was the alcoholic that had killed his fiance, we did some work there. There was a lady there that we helped to cross over, and then there was that gentleman. And then I got a phone. Usually when we go in and do our work, that's it. We don't ever have to go back. So I got a text from this lady, and she said, well, there's some new activity taking place. I thought, really? Huh, wonder, did we miss somebody or what? So we went down there again to the house. And what had happened was she had there were two spirit children, a brother and a sister, that had followed her home from her child's school. So we had to work with them and, you know, help them find their loved ones on the other side. So sometimes the person, if they're very intuitive or they reach that point where their gifts are starting to blossom, they will start to attract spirits to them. And that's, we work with clients in that respect too, and try to point them towards books and classes that can help them to learn how to work with that, or shut it off if they don't want to work with it.
Yeah. Is that something you've come across often, where you've helped something move on and then something's replaced it?
Not usually. That's very rare. So she was kind of a unique case, because she was really, really coming into her gifts. And it was almost like someone had turned on a light switch, and she was like a lighthouse. So we did spend, I think the second time we went down there and worked with those two child spirits and helped them to cross over, that was a fairly quick process. And then I think we sat down with that lady for about an hour, hour and a half, and just talked to her about how to work with this, and try to find her a teacher and a class that she could possibly attend, you know, to learn how to work with it, or to shut it off if she didn't want to have these experiences in the future.
Yeah, so she'd essentially become some kind of beacon.
Right, right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I can. We were going to a case over in East Tennessee. There were some children that were being affected by spirit activity, and we always travel way beyond our 150-mile radius of Memphis. So it was like a 600-mile round trip.
Yeah.
Well, we were on the interstate, and we were crossing the Tennessee River about halfway to this location. And all of a sudden, I could feel like there was a male spirit that had gotten into the car. And they were both shut down, in a sense. They had shut their chakras down. And because mediums, most of the times when they're not working, they're going to shut all that off so they're not bothered by it.
Yes.
But I pretty much stay open all the time. And so I could tell someone got in the car, and I said, hey, are you okay? Would you like to, let's see if we can help this gentleman. And he was a guy from like World War II. that was, he looked like, to me, it felt like he was wearing a hunting jacket, but when Kayla tuned in, he was actually wearing a paratrooper's jacket, and he was searching for his mother. So that was an instance where he could see our lights and knew that he might be able to get some help from us, and he did. So those types of things just occur all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting as well, because obviously where you are with Memphis, you are essentially on the cusp of several states, Stephen. So
right.
as you refer to there, your 150-mile radius, I would imagine, probably takes you into, what, three or four different states?
Actually, seven, parts of seven states, but, you know, we're right at the corner of West Tennessee, Eastern Arkansas, Northern Mississippi.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can travel a lot in those states, and then we can also get into Louisiana, Missouri, Kentucky a little bit, and Alabama.
Yeah.
So I've been all over the Southeast U.S.
Well, it's one of the benefits of paranormal investigations is you get to see some of the most beautiful places in the world, I would imagine, as well.
Absolutely. You know, and I've been in your beautiful country, too, but it was before I was aware of my guests. And I would love to come back and just walk through some of the castles that I went through, you know, years ago and just see what, you know, see what I feel or who I could connect with there.
Absolutely. I'm surprised anybody can move for the amount of ghosts that live in this little island of ours, Stephen, to be honest.
I'm sure it's pretty crowded.
Absolutely. There seems to be a ghost everywhere. And long may it continue. So what I found very interesting, as someone that studied American history, I know I'm very surprised that Memphis isn't mentioned more in regards to the paranormal, Stephen, because in my study, like I say, I studied American history at college. So one of the things that I tended to gravitate towards, I was attracted and I was interested in pandemics and things like that. And obviously Memphis, I believe in the 1870s, suffered a horrific outbreak of yellow fever, which ran rampant through the town's population and essentially ended up bankrupting it, I believe.
Right, you're right.
So when I hear about the most haunted places in the States, Memphis never gets mentioned. You know, it's always Chicago or San Francisco or Gettysburg or, as you referred to, you know, San Antonio in Texas is another one. Galveston, obviously, because of what happened with the infamous hurricane 100 years ago. Does that surprise you? Because I would expect, not that I'm, you know, saying it's full of disembodied spirits, but Memphis, with its history, and obviously that particular period, I find it odd that it doesn't seem to get more recognition as perhaps more of a paranormal hotspot than people think of it.
Yeah, I'm surprised too. I mean, there are many, many spots in downtown Memphis that have spirit activity, and a lot of the old hotels during our Civil War were actually used as hospitals. I've been in buildings that have been converted to condos and that type of thing, and oh my gosh, there's just so much spirit activity. In fact, we pretty much have to shut when we go into downtown. We have to really kind of narrow our shut our antenna down a little bit because it's pretty much overwhelming in different areas. But yeah, a lot of people report activity, and there's one book that's been written about haunted Memphis, but it's mostly about the most famous cases and that type of thing. You know, there's a haunting of the big theater here, the Orpheum Theater. You know, those types of things. And I've been in all those locations and actually worked with that child spirit and actually helped her to cross over. So she's at a much better vibration than she was originally. But I don't know. I guess no one's ever really taken time to write about it as much. But there's a lot of activity here. Just like there is pretty much anywhere you go. Then I mean, there's spirits everywhere.
Absolutely, because Memphis has got one of my favorite hauntings. I hope I'm right. There's a bar, I believe. Is it called Ernestine and Hazel?
Right.
Excuse my pronunciation. Because does it have a haunted jukebox? Because I just think that's amazing.
It does. It does, and I've actually witnessed that.
Wow. So what goes on in that venue? Because I know it's one of those places where It used to be a bar, and then I think it was a den of iniquity as well at some point. Mind you, I think most places are over 100 years.
Right. That's on what they call South Main Street. Yeah. Main Street is a long, long street in Memphis. And at one point, businesses in that part of our town kind of got run down. Mm-hmm. It's been revitalized now. It's a beautiful area now. But that particular bar began, I think, as a drugstore. Mm. And then at one point it was sold to some ladies. They turned it into a bordello. Mm-hmm. and then a gentleman inherited the property. I actually met him. His name is Russell. And he was very generous and gave me many opportunities to go in there. And I talked with the bartender, Karen, who had a lot of experiences in there. I also had some. And what's cool about Ernestine and Hazel's is they never dressed it up. I mean, it looks like it's from the 50s, and you know, a little bit shabby, which is cool.
Yeah,
you know, it has that vibe about it.
Mm.
It was unfortunate. Russell actually took himself over a couple of years back, so I have not been there since that occurred. So I wonder if we might encounter him there, his spirit. But yeah, it's a very interesting place. It's what you would typically think of as a juke joint type place, and they have amazing hamburgers.
Excellent. So. When did this jukebox start? Because, like I say, I've always been interested in unusual hauntings as well, Stephen, because it's, you know, whether it's, you know, with the greatest respect, I don't mean this disrespectfully to any venue or any paranormal research, you know, it's often, you know, with children or white ladies wandering around. So when you come across something like this where it's a haunted jukebox, I'm often attracted to stories like that because they are unusual and quite unique.
Right. I don't remember the timeline on that jukebox. I know when I spoke with Russell and Karen, it had been going on for, you know, as long as they had he had the property.
Mm.
So what was unusual, in fact, when I was down there one time, I was having a conversation with someone in that front part of the building, and all of a sudden that thing kicked on by itself, and it played a song that related to what we were talking about. So there's definitely a spirit in there that's getting a real kick out of doing that, you know.
Excellent.
Probably got a pretty good musical taste too.
Excellent. So it's a music lover as well as clearly got a very good and powerful sense of humor.
Right. And those are the kinds that you like to be around and work with, you know, because they're always fun. They really are. They're just people. They just don't have their bodies anymore.
Absolutely. Yeah, fabulous. I mean, and obviously, you know, Memphis has a you know, a musical history longer than most cities in the world, never mind in America.
Right.
So I would be disappointed if it didn't have, you know, having a haunted jukebox just, you know, ticks all the boxes for me, Stephen, for Memphis to keep it on the map. So, I mean,
well, definitely stop there if you come to town.
Oh.
It's worth a trip.
Oh, yeah. Memphis has been on my bucket list for a very long time, my friend. It's one of those places I've always wanted to visit, because I think one of the other aspects of Memphis that a lot of people aren't aware of, because obviously it's in the South, is that there is a history of voodoo being practiced in the area as well, I believe, which a lot of people solely seem to associate with New Orleans, and that's it. That's as far as a lot of people from outside those particular states, you know, Louisiana and Tennessee and that area and along the Mississippi, they don't seem to think that it's anywhere else, but it seems to have a big culture all along the Mississippi, primarily, I would imagine, because it was such a passageway for people from all over the world, Stephen.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, there's a place here called Voodoo Village. I guess it's still around. I always remember that when I was a child. And, you know, the big thing was let's drive down to Voodoo Village and drive through there on a Friday night, you know. And I was always a little bit apprehensive about that. I never did it, but I heard of people that did it. But they would the descriptions I got about the place was they had all kinds of weird, you know, little things out in the yards and on the doors and things like that. So I guess there were people in that particular little neighborhood that adhered to those philosophies and teachings, you know.
Because I think Memphis is also one of the things I've been struck when I've seen things about its haunted history as well, is it seems to have It's one of those places where there seems to be several well-known hauntings in graveyards. And it's got quite a... Like I say, once again, I think, because obviously it's so connected with the Mississippi, Stephen, mm-hmm. I think it's one of those places where lots of different religious groups and things turned up and sort of settled in the area. And it's because it's been such a hubbub of activity over the years, it seems to have lots of very different graveyards for different religious denominations, and it seems that each one has its own little quirks.
Yeah, you know, we've heard and I've checked out some of these. You hear about the weeping angels, or the statues that blood will come from the eyes and that kind of thing. I did go to one. It was not actually in Memphis, a little bit outside of Memphis, and checked out that rumor. And yeah, it looked like, you know, maybe the statue had some kind of deposit around the face, and looked like you could see where some tears had fallen, that kind of thing. But, you know, honestly, I didn't feel any energy. So that's what I have to go by, is trying to read the energy of the location. So, but yeah, there's a really famous haunting, and that was actually made the newspapers. It had to do with gold and someone secreting some gold, and that was at a boarding house, and that was a big story. I think that was in the 1880s or 1890s, and I was going to try to go and see if I could track that down, but unfortunately that property was demolished many years ago, and I think there's a big warehouse sitting on the location. So
yeah absolutely. I mean, is it that kind of place that obviously Memphis is a historic town, and I think, was it your bicentennial last year, I believe? Is it around?
Yes.
You're around 200 years old down there, I believe, now, Stephen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an old town.
Yeah. It is, like I say, it's one of those lovely places that just, it seems, steeped in history in regards to America. And I know sometimes Americans think we're very dismissive about American history because, you know, then, you know, 200 years, you know, growing up, my house was built in the 17th. My house was built in the 18th century as a child. So, you know,
right.
the house I grew up in is probably older than most cities in the States, but I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just think I've got a real appreciation of America and American history. And I found it a fascinatingly interesting and exciting place. And there seems to be so much going on in so many different areas at different aspects of the last couple of hundred years. So, you know, I'm never disrespectful in regards to the States, because, you know, like I say, I've got so much respect and admiration for a lot of the places out there. It's irrevocably tied to both music and culture, and like I say, I think it is one of those cities in the States that is extremely significant, perhaps more so than its actual size.
Yeah, there's a lot of history here, and of course music figures prominently. I've actually been in the area of town where Sun Studios is. There was a place that was across the street from Sun Studios, and we got reports, this is several years back, of this. They would see this young guy at the end of the bar, and he was dressed in a white T-shirt and blue jeans and kind of the ducktail type haircut. And he would be down usually at the end of the bar where there was girls or young women drinking down there, and then all of a sudden he would vanish. It was interesting. I used to do workshops, and I took a group of people down there. I got friendly with the owner, and he said, "Yeah, come on in. You know, kind of have the run of the place." And so we went upstairs, and I had some EMF meters with me, and it was interesting because I had a pretty lady that was in our group, and I had given EMF meters to everyone, and hers was the only one that was going off. And so I said, "Well, let's try something here." I said, "Give it to me." And nothing. As soon as I gave it back to her, it started going crazy. So apparently this guy, he really liked her, and he was making that well known. But I spent the night there one night, and I asked him, because I could feel it, that he was there. And I said, "I have to get up at 5:30 and go to work. Can you please wake me up in case my alarm clock goes off?" So I put my EMF meter beside my sleeping bag there, And I swear to you, at 5:30, that thing started going crazy. So he was congenial, you know. He was a fun spirit.
Yeah. I mean, I've often been attracted to Memphis, obviously, because one of my favorite record labels of all time is Stax. And I know Stax started in Memphis before it moved.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So obviously I've often, that's probably one of the reasons why I've got an appreciation of the city, Stephen, because obviously, you know, Stax is notable for some of the grittier sounding soul records of the early and later 60s, you know, with people like Wilson Pickett and Otis Redding and Sam and Dave and stuff. So is that kind of something that still, do we still get these, because obviously, you know, sadly some of these people passed away in tragic circumstances, is there? And obviously I know people often think of Memphis and Elvis, but I think for me, is there more reports of other celebrity ghosts from the musical heritage, as you refer to there, other than obviously, you know, the Elvis one at Graceland is probably most well known, but is there any other notable celebrity ghosts that are supposed to inhabit their old haunts and bars and studios?
You know, I have not heard reports of that. You hear a lot about Elvis at Graceland, about mm-hmm. the people have had experience. I had a personal experience there when I took a couple of mediums for a tour. Yeah, but I know where Stax, the original building was, and I think that's no longer there. So I really don't know. I haven't had any, you know, any instances where I've interacted with any other spirits other than the spirit of Elvis there at Graceland.
Mm. Well, that's something I think they need to work on then, definitely, Stephen. It would be nice.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So for you in regards to your work in there, is there any kind of locations or particular areas of Memphis that seem to be more prone to the paranormal staying or being attached to a particular area? Or do you think it's something that affects all aspects of the urban and outer areas of the city?
We get called to, you know, if you were to walk down the street and look at the house, you would think, oh, that's just your typical subdivision house. You know, there's that doesn't look like anything that could have a haunting going on there, any kind of activity. But yeah, I mean, it's not localized to any certain part of town. I've been in downtown, I've been in Midtown, in many homes that were built like in the turn of the century, 1920s, and sometimes spirits will linger in those locations for different reasons. That's where the girl in the closet was. Yeah. And then, you know, I've been in homes that were, nothing was built there until recently. So those were definitely cases where the spirits were attached to the land or followed someone for some reason. So yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to it. And I often, when we pull up to a house, I always say to my colleagues, well, it certainly doesn't look like a haunted house, does it? Because you can't judge, you know, can't judge these books by their covers at all.
Well, exactly. I think everybody expects a haunted house to look like Amityville.
Which I
find quite ironic, but I've mentioned my feelings about the Amityville case before. I'll not bore anybody else.
Okay.
But it is interesting, and I think that is the kind of aspect, as you touched on there, that people tend to have a perception of what a haunted house should look like or how it should be. You know what I mean?
And right.
I think we're so used to these cliches that we see in films and television that, you know, they always seem, some houses seem to look menacing, if that makes sense.
Right. No, that's always our objective, and our job is to go in and figure out, you know, by connecting with whichever spirits are there at the location, to find out why they're there, you know, where they've come from, what their purpose is, you know, and would they accept our offer of help, you know. They're always very interested, it seems, on the whole, to find out that they don't have to be there. I think a lot of times they don't realize that, you know. And when someone comes in and says, you know, your loved one is right here, would you like us to show you where they are and help you to find them? And they're almost always, you know, ready for that assistance. Mm. And it's very gratifying because it helps them, and it also helps those people whose home has been kind of turned upside down by all this to get back to normal. Mm. You know, their kids aren't being frightened anymore, and, you know, everybody goes back to having a normal life, or the business is not having all these strange things going on. You know, they can concentrate on their business and not not picking up things that have been thrown off all over the place during the night, you know.
Yeah, not having to replace cleaners who won't work overnight and things like that.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
it's very frightening for people, though. It really is.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
to me, it's very normal. You mentioned you love the paranormal. Well,
yeah,
to me, it's the normal.
Yes. Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
right,
obviously, we call it the paranormal. I'm the same as you. You know, I'm always interested and thirsty to find these new situations and speak to people,
mm-hmm,
and talk about their experiences. And I tend to view it on quite a positive and reflective manner, Stephen. And like I say, I think sometimes people get into that aspect of it always being negative and never being a positive. And I think sometimes people tend to miss the uptick in what a haunting can be, whether,
mm-hmm,
whether it's a source of comfort or support or even guardianship, as we've referred to earlier,
right,
and simply focus on the negative, which I think often is a minimal aspect of the whole phenomenon, rather than the general parallels that you may get from that kind of positive reinforcement that most of the time these are quite ambivalent, boring, standard hauntings.
Right. You know, originally when I got involved in all this back 18 years ago, I was searching for proof that there was an afterlife.
Mm.
And that came within about a year when I heard a little girl spirit speak out loud in a movie theater, like at 2 a.m. in the morning. So after that, I had my proof. And then we would go into people's homes and we would take all this equipment in, take us an hour, set up, you know, we record for a couple, 3 hours. And then we take an hour to pack up and come home. Then you have to listen to all that.
Yes.
And, you know, you might hear a voice or this or that. You know, you might experience something being thrown while you're there. And, you know, you put that on a website. And so what? You know, typically people are not going to accept that kind of proof anyway, unless they were there. So it got to a point, it's like, what are we doing this for? You know, we go into these places, we're able to capture this evidence. You know, the people already know something's going on or they wouldn't have called us, right? And that, you know, we did verify that they were experiencing something, but we would leave and then it would continue. So it was like, what are we, you know, how do we take this to the next step? So when I met this lady named Linda, who's a medium down in St. Augustine, Florida, about 13 years ago, and she said, we were in a bed and breakfast. She said, and there was a little girl there. She said, well, we're going to help her cross over. I said, what do you mean? You know, she showed me how she did it.
Mm.
And my method's a little different than hers, but, you know, I learned from everybody and you adapt and so forth. But suddenly the light bulb went on and it's like, okay, we can actually affect a positive change here.
Mm.
You know, we can actually help this situation. And so after that, it was like, you know, I just never looked back. The evidence doesn't really mean much to me anymore. I mean, I can get the information, my mediums can get the information intuitively, and it always matches up to the people's experiences. And and the main goal is to go in and try to help those spirits release and transition, so everybody gets back, they get back to where they get to where they need to be, and then the people's lives get back to normal.
Is it a situation that when you do go into that kind of scenario to assist homeowners and a family, Stephen, when you're doing the vibrational cleansing, do you just stop at the front and back door, or do you make sure that you take into consideration any potential sort of outside areas, you know, not, you know, in the land or the property itself, that it may be more than just centered on the actual house, and it may have locations in and around the property that may have occurrences?
Yeah, we of course go through the house room by room and do the clearing there, because that helps neutralize any heavy energy that's collected, because some of these houses you know, multiple people have lived in these areas. And there's all kinds of emotional turmoil, like depression and grief and anger and so forth. Those emotional energies tend to collect in, in spaces, and people pick up on that whether they realize it or not. And so we do the complete thorough cleansing of the house or clearing of the house vibrationally using a tuning fork that's tuned to a certain frequency and a crystal to amplify that. And then we always ask for the land to be cleared. So actually, I'm not the person doing the clearing, although I'm the one that's carrying those things around. It's actually we're asking on our allies, higher vibrational allies, to come through and do the work.
Is it interesting? I mean, that aspect is, where would you draw the line? You know, especially if you, I would imagine, have you had to deal with situations where you've had spirits that inhabit an area of land rather than a piece of property, Stephen?
Oh, yeah. One house we went to, there was a conflict between Native American peoples and some settlers. And the people that were living on this particular piece of land, they might have had a half an acre. But when we there was a skirmish there, and there were I've never come across Native American earthbound spirits, because I believe they were so highly evolved spiritually and so ready when it was their time to go ahead and transition. They never got stuck. But there were settlers there in that location that needed help. So, and the Native Americans had actually placed guardians at the four corners of this area. So we kind of knew what the area encompassed. And so we worked with that and asked for that whole space to be clear.
Marvelous. Well, how fascinating. I mean, that to me would, that is surprising, because I think it's one of those things that I think a lot of people just presume everywhere there must be Native American spirits for some reason just wandering around, Stephen. So it's a refreshing to hear that interpretation and that take on it, because I think it's one of those things that can sometimes become a bit of a cliche in regards to the paranormal and psychic connections, that some people tend to fall into that, oh, well, it's always a Native American response to a particular area.
No, I've come across their guardians. They put different energies on sites that were sacred to them. And I work with a Native American guide. He shows me crows all the time. And Kayla also has a Native American guide that she works with. He helps us, helps the entire team out. But I've never come across an earthbound spirit. Now, I can't say for sure that there's none out there, but I have never come across one in 18 years, but I have felt the energy of, you know, transitioned Native Americans at different sites, sacred sites and so forth.
Fascinating. So, what's next for you and your team? Have you got any investigations lined up, or have you got any cases that are currently ongoing, Stephen?
Actually, we have one Friday night, so you know, we're still under the COVID rules over here. So we wear, we take our masks, and we ask our clients to wear masks while we're there. We don't allow children ever to be on site when we're doing an investigation. But you know, typically we can go into a house and be out within hour to 2 hours at max. So we're not disrupting anyone's lives that much. But yeah, we have one coming up Friday night, and there will be more. It seems like this time of year.
One of the things that before I let you go, Stephen, one of the things that really struck me about yourself and your team is you don't take payment for this. You know, you're doing this as a kind of service, I would suggest. And what I was struck by is that you, if anybody wants to say thank you in a way, you simply ask them to make a charitable donation. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, we have a children's research hospital here that's working on a cure for pediatric cancer, and that's St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. So in the 18 years that I've done this, I've never taken a penny for any of this. So a lot of times people will do want to pay us. They, you know, they're very grateful for what we do for them. But I always say, you know, if you want to express your thanks, just, you know, send a donation into St. Jude, and most do.
Well, I think that, you know, all credit to you and your team, and I think that just sets you apart from the standard expectations of paranormal investigations, Stephen, so I can only wish you and your team continued success. I believe you're planning on releasing a book, so is that anywhere near fruition and a release date, sir?
It's going kind of slowly. I plan to finish it this winter and publish it in the spring. So yeah, it'll be a guidebook. It'll I'll reveal all the techniques that I've developed and learned from mediums through my 13 years of spirit rescue and how we do it. Now, there's other people I've met that do spirit rescue and they do it slightly differently, and that's fine. Everybody's got their own way, but this works for us. It always works, and it's been very effective. And then we'll talk about some of the cases, interesting cases and interesting spirits that I've met over the years, like Henry.
Yeah.
Those types of people. So yeah, it'll be a good place for someone who's wanting to explore the intuitive side of this and not have to rely on equipment so much. So I'll have some tips on how to develop your intuitive abilities and that type of thing.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to that being released, and if you're available, we'd love to have you back on to have a chat about it when it comes out.
I would love to. That'd be great.
Okay. Well, Stephen, where can everybody keep up to date with yourself and the team and find out more about you guys and the work that you do?
Okay, we have a website. It's memphisghostinvestigations.com. And we also have a Facebook page, and you can search for Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue and find us there. There's also a link at the top of our homepage that will take you right to the Facebook page. And normally on the Facebook page, I'll put a few pictures, more pictures than I will on the website. But we have a news section on the website that kind of keeps up to date on everything we got going on, and our different media, interviews and things we've done, and some tips and so forth. So we're glad to help anybody anywhere.
Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure I keep all the links and put them in the show notes for everybody if they need to find them further on. And I would like to say thank you very much for a fascinating and enlightening conversation, Stephen. You guys stay safe out there. All the best to you and your team.
Thank you, Paul. If you're ever in Memphis, please look me up.
You can count on it. You take care.
All right, take care. Thanks.